You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, well, tonight we're getting into 1 Peter chapter 5. This whole book, Peter's been talking to his readers about suffering. They were suffering and how to suffer in a hostile world. And, you know, the suffering that they were experiencing was about to get a lot worse because Nero was just, you know, right on the front edge of really ramping up the insanity in his own life and also ramping up the persecution of Christians. Well, it was going to be a time when they needed strong leadership more than ever. It was also going to be a time when being a leader for God was going to be more costly than ever. And so tonight, Peter is going to speak directly to the leaders in this church, and he's going to exhort them to shepherd the flock of God. And we're going to learn what that means. You know, shepherding. He says, "Therefore, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God among you." Now, shepherding, we live in a city, we live in an urban environment. I don't know how many of us have ever been exposed to livestock in any sort of a significant way. But, you know, when we think about sheep, you know, we might think about modern, you know, mutton mills where you have thousands of sheep housed together in entirely too close conditions, unsanitary. You know, these sheep, there's no like personal element of with any of these sheep. These are anonymous inmates that are on their way to your local grocery store's meat department. That's not what we're talking about here. When we talk about shepherding in Scripture, you know, the picture is one that's more like this. And this is still practiced in many parts of the world today. You have a shepherd, maybe a couple of shepherds out on a nice green hillside with the flock of sheep. And, you know, Peter says, shepherd the flock of God among you. You know, shepherding is a common metaphor for leadership in the Bible. From the very earliest times, the earliest Jews were shepherds. In fact, some of the very first humans were shepherds. We read all the way back in Genesis chapter 4. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, he was a shepherd as well. And, you know, sheep, they needed the shepherd. You know, sheep are not intelligent animals. Sheep, they're like one of the few animals that basically have no defense mechanism at all. All they can do is try to run away, and they're not very fast. You know, sheep can die from something as simple as falling over. When they fall over, the gases start to build up in their stomach, and they can't roll back over. And that can literally kill a sheep in 20 minutes or so. So the shepherd has to be on the watch for this. Part of what the shepherd watches for is he watches for the vultures to start to circle in an area, and then he knows that sheep is cast. I need to go and I need to set that sheep back up on its feet while there's still time. You know, the sheep needed the shepherd to protect the sheep. They needed the shepherd to lead the sheep to good water, to good food. They needed the shepherd to go and find the sheep when they wandered off. So we see this. This would have been an image that they would have been very familiar with. And God is depicted as our shepherd. You know, this is where we start to see shepherding as a model of leadership. You know, God is like this kind, watchful, sentient being on the hillside with all these sheep that are not real smart, they're not real faithful, they're easily led astray, they'll drink just the grossest things, eat the grossest things. And so, you know, David says in Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I have all that I need. He leads me to still waters. You know, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake." So we see God being depicted as a shepherd. And then we also see God criticizing the leaders of his people, and he calls them bad shepherds. He says, "What sorrow awaits you shepherds who feed yourselves instead of your flocks?" He's like, you guys are fattening, you're just slaughtering the sheep for your own sake. You don't care about the sheep at all. All you care about is yourself. And God says, "I'm going to do something about this." He says, "I will set over my people one shepherd." And he begins to point to the Messiah as this shepherd who will come, this promised one who will come, and he will shepherd his sheep. Well, when Jesus shows up, he claims to be that shepherd. We see the way he looked out at the crowds, and he said they were the people, he just felt compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep that didn't have a shepherd. Imagine how sad it would be, these sheep with no defense mechanisms just wandering around with no one to look after them. And Jesus says, "I will be that shepherd." He says, "I am the good shepherd. And the good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep." And so he begins to describe what is biblical sacrificial servant leadership. You know, it's the shepherd sacrificing his life for the sheep. Jesus ultimately sacrificed his life for us. He sacrificed his life for you. He died in your place so that you could join his flock, so that you could belong to him. And Jesus says, no one snatches my sheep away from me. Once I've got them in my hand, no one takes them away from me. And so Peter here, he's calling on his readers, and he's really speaking to us as well. He's calling on us to take up the shepherd's staff, to work under the chief shepherd, Jesus, to shepherd the flock of God. So let's see what Peter says here. He says, I exhort the elders among you. And he's going to say three things about himself before he begins to tell us how to shepherd the flock. And I think we can learn some things about leadership from how he describes himself. He first of all describes himself, he calls himself your fellow elder. And he talks to the elders among you. And so he's kind of lumping himself in with the rest of the leaders in this church. You know, he doesn't refer to himself as a pope. You know, he saw himself as just a fellow leader right in there with the others. Even though he was big time, he was Peter. He was, you know, one of Jesus' best friends commissioned by Jesus himself. Here he is writing scripture. And yet he doesn't view himself as over and above everyone. He's viewing himself as your fellow elder. I'm just like you guys. You know, the New Testament, we look at the way they organized their leadership. It was very simple. You know, they met in houses. They only really had two types of leadership offices. One was called an elder. Sometimes it's called an overseer. Sometimes it's called a bishop. You know, some people have tried to sort of separate, and they say, well, there were elders, but then there was like a single bishop over an entire area. And then eventually it kind of evolved to, well, the pope is like the bishop over the whole church. But that's not, we don't find basis for that in the Bible. What we see elders, and we see multiple elders, like it says here, the elders among you. So we see a group of elders that are over a local church. And then below them, we see deacons. It's sort of like the level of leadership just below elder. You know, if we had an org chart, you've got your elders. The elders were over the deacons. And then the elders and deacons would have had some kind of a spiritual authority over the other believers. Of course, you know, these titles, these were only given to people that were already performing the function of servant leadership. You know, we don't give someone a title and hope that they'll start being a servant leader. No, we find people who are already leading. We find people who, you know, the people in the church are already following. They're already looking to. And those are the ones that we give leadership titles to. And so what is the application of this here? Well, I think one important application is we lead in teams and not alone. You know, he says, I exhort the elders among you. He says, shepherd the flock of God among you. He calls himself your fellow elder. And so we lead in teams. And God does not just have one single person. No, he has a team of people. You know, this is something that can be sort of difficult. It's kind of hard to get along with people. There's something in our instinct that just wants to be the only one. You know, I had a hard time getting along with co-leaders. You know, I remember early on being put into a position of spiritual leadership. I was leading what we call ministry houses. Some of you live in ministry houses. And I was co-leading a ministry house with another guy. And frankly, from the very beginning, I sort of just thought this guy wasn't that good. I didn't think he really should have been leading with me. I thought I could handle it just fine. And so I just sort of worked around him. I might like sort of give him some dirty work to do or something like that. But I kind of just looked down at him. And I'm embarrassed to say that. It's too bad because we led together for several years. And when I look back, I see he had strengths in areas that I was weak. I had strengths in areas that he was weak. And yet, I really feel like I dropped the ball there. I do not feel like, eventually I came around on this, but it was only after several years. I feel like I lost a lot of time. I felt like I could have helped him a lot more, and I feel like I could have learned from him a lot more. And I honestly, I wish I could do that one over again. Now, nowadays, I'm a Christian leader, and I lead in a lot of different areas, and everywhere that I'm leading, I'm on a team of leaders. And I love my co-leaders. I thank God for my co-leaders. I don't know what I would do without them. And so I wonder if some of us here, we've got co-leaders, we're leading for God in some way, and we're not taking full advantage of the co-leaders that God has put in our lives. And we need to listen to what Peter's saying here. How he speaks of leadership as a team thing and not as an individualistic thing. He also calls himself a witness of the sufferings of Christ. Yeah, I think he's doing what he's been doing throughout this book. He's saying, look, you guys are suffering. And sometimes when you're leading for God, you're like, this is hard. Am I doing something wrong? And then Peter's like, no, actually, I saw. He saw most of the sufferings in Jesus's ministry. He saw quite a few of them. And he's like, look, I remember watching Jesus suffer tremendously. And so it shouldn't surprise us that we're suffering as well as we seek to be shepherds under the chief shepherd. He also calls himself a partaker of the glory that is to be revealed. And this is something that he's been doing the last couple of weeks. He's pointing their eyes toward the return of Christ, toward the end of this age. He's pointing ahead to that moment when this life passes away and we stand before the chief shepherd. And he says, well done, good and faithful servant. And so this is what, you know, kept Peter going in leadership. This is why he was able to be faithful for all these decades since, you know, it had been 30 years since Jesus had passed away, since he died and then rose and gone into heaven. And this is what kept Peter going. He was like, look, pretty soon I'm going to see my best friend, Jesus, and I can't wait for that day. And I want to please him. I want to do what he called on me to do. And then he says, shepherd the flock of God among you. And what Peter's going to tell us, he's going to tell us how to do this. He's going to describe what biblical shepherd leadership looks like. And he's going to do it with four contrasts. He's going to tell us what not to do and what to do. And what not to do, but do this. Not this, but that. And so we've got four contrasts that he's going to lay out for us here. He says, I want you to exercise oversight. And I want you to do that not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God. And so our first contrast here is the difference between leadership that says, I get to do this, versus I've got to do this. I have to do this. This is Peter's like, look, I don't want you to come in to this task of shepherding the flock, feeling all this pressure and feeling this duty, and you just like got roped into this, and you have to do this, and you don't really want to do it. I don't know if you guys have ever been like, you know, roped into something, where you're like, I didn't really want to do this, but somehow I find myself doing this. Like, you know, a friend is moving, and you're like, I guess I can help. Don't really want to. You're sort of like, whoa, look at the time. Guess I got to go. You're really dragging. You really are trying not to have to carry that really heavy thing. Maybe, you know, sometimes there would be projects at school or at work then later that I would get roped into doing, you know, the harder duty. And I'm like, geez, this is not interesting to me. Why am I the one that got picked for this? Just kind of resentful, you know. And unfortunately, some people serve God this way. You know, some people, they've been called by God to lead in some way, and they just feel like, geez, I guess I have to. Instead of feeling this grateful, look what I get to do. It's like, geez, look what I have to do. Look what I've got to do. Usually these people aren't effective. They're not going to inspire anyone else to step up into something like that. They're often doing the bare minimum. They're often resentful. They're often just complaining about feeling all this pressure. You know, under compulsion, that can be translated under pressure. And Peter's like, I don't want you walking around feeling like you're this martyr for Christ because you're leading for him, because you're shepherding under him. If this is the situation that a person is in, something needs to change. You know, we either need to change our attitude or we need to change our leadership. When you get somebody in there that doesn't feel like, you know, I hate doing this. And, you know, Peter is saying, not under compulsion, but voluntarily. Obviously, he thinks we can change our perspective. We can change our attitude. You know, this is the most internal of the four pairs that he gives us. Obviously, we can change our attitude. And one of the main ways we do that is through gratitude. I need to be thankful to God. And that is what shapes my perspective. You know, when I think about the leadership responsibilities, the shepherding work God has marked out for me, I just think about his grace and mercy. You know, his grace, which is what he's given me that I didn't deserve. His mercy, I didn't get what I did deserve. I know I'm headed for heaven, where at his right hand are pleasures forever. I mean, that alone is enough to catapult someone onto a life of grateful service where God, I was lost, but now I'm found. I'll do whatever you want. So just thanking God for his grace and his mercy, that is the bedrock of any service for him. But also, you know, I think about the many ways that leading for God has led to growth in my character. I don't know where I would be if not for the pressures and the structure and the opportunities that God has given me, the ways God has challenged me to be more like Christ, the way he's shaped me through the leadership responsibilities that he's given me. I think about the ways it's grown me closer to Jesus, where when I'm comfortable, it's sort of hard to pray, but then when I feel the pressure is on, when I feel, when I feel like, and you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's times we get pretty tired. There's times it's hard. I mean, there's a reason why Peter is having this conversation at this point in the letter, because he knows it's hard. He himself has been through this. But when the difficulties are there, that is either an opportunity to feel sorry for myself and feel upset with someone who I feel like put me in this role, or I can draw closer to Christ and I can say, you're the chief shepherd. You're the one that's called me to feed your sheep. And that I need your strength. We learn to draw from the strength of Christ in order to serve under the chief shepherd. That's one of the great, great things about working with the chief shepherd is he gives us the energy and the direction. I thank God for the friends I've made through leading for him. Pretty much all of my best friends have been current or former co-leaders. And there's a closeness that comes when you have a shared mission together. You know, even like the closest that comes from being on a sports team together, or the closest that comes from working with your coworkers together, it's that, but it's so much more than that, because this is an eternal purpose, because we're seeing lives changed in a real way. And we're doing this together. Even people that I knew before, like family members that I knew before and didn't have a great relationship, then we co-led for a while together. And we became so close through that. And we have this common bond and this common purpose. And it allows for deeper relationships. I think about the ways it's helped my marriage. I think, I don't know where my family would be if I wasn't leading for God. And I'm so grateful that I get to do this. I think about the future rewards that I've gained that Peter is already pointing us to in verse 1. That I'll circle back around to in verse 4 as well. And I just can't believe that I get to do anything for God. I can't believe that I'm not headed to hell. Instead, I'm headed for heaven. And I get to talk to him whenever I just want to draw near to him. And he's given me stuff to do that's significant. How could we feel sorry for ourselves if that's our life? I want more of that. That's something you could tell God. I would pray, God, I want to be used by you. I want to be used by you in big ways. Do whatever you need to do in my life to make that happen. That's a prayer that you can and I think should pray. Give me desire for that, Lord. The second contrast, he says, not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. Sordid gain, financial gain. It's the difference between eager to take from the sheep and eager to give to the sheep. You know, remember those in Ezekiel 34, those leaders he was rebuking because they just take from the flock. They take. A lot of people have seen Christian leadership, so-called Christian leadership, as an opportunity to make money. And, even in the early church, they had this problem. There were these, you know, early on, some of these leaders, there was so much work to do shepherding the flock of God. They just didn't have time to do the job they were doing previously. And so the church would collect money to help support their leaders, and then the leaders would be freed full time to shepherd the flock. Well, other people are like, wow, this is a good way to make some money. And so false teachers would come through trying to take people's money, teaching some, you know, new strange teaching. We see this today. You know, Jesus, he talked about this character called the hired hand. You know, sometimes, you know, shepherding was a family business, but sometimes you needed to hire some extra help, maybe temporarily. And so you'd hire somebody who didn't know the sheep, who hadn't been there with these sheep since they were little lambies. And then, you know, when the wolf comes along, if the shepherd's there, who loves the sheep, who cares for the sheep, the shepherd steps between the sheep and the wolf with their stick and is like, bring it on. The hired hand, pew, takes off the other direction because they were just in it for the paycheck. And Jesus said the hired hand runs away because he's working only for the money and doesn't really care about the sheep. And so this is the contrast. You know, Peter remembered eventually the teaching that Jesus gave on leadership. And this passage, he's just drawing on what Jesus taught him. And he's like, look, we're not eager to take from the sheep. We're eager to give to the sheep. And you know, Christian leaders often get busted for taking. You have somebody, they seem like this big time Christian leader, and it turns out they're getting rich off of serving God, which is a travesty. How can someone get rich serving God? I think that is pitiful. That is so unlike the way Christ and the apostles lived. But you know, you have somebody, it looks like they're this godly person. It turns out they've got this secret, like entire, like these sex affairs going on. They're using people in the congregation. They're stealing money from their congregants. They're stealing money from poor people. They get busted for taking, and it brings shame to the name of Christ. And Peter says, no, this is not how we lead, not for financial gain, but with eagerness to give, to serve someone. Why is it that we can give? Why don't we need to take from the sheep? Why don't we don't have this codependent relationship with the sheep. No, we can give because we're receiving from the chief shepherd, and we're also focusing on his return. And so we're like, yeah, I can go without for a little while because I know that Christ is coming back soon. The chief shepherd will soon appear. You know, some of us, we might not be in it for the money. Some of us might, though. We might be looking to get some money off of serving God. But some of us, you know, it's like we'll serve God as long as we get recognition, you know, or as long as we get appreciation. You know, I feel like that's something that I can struggle with. It's like I can work hard as long as I feel like I'm being appreciated. Some of us were in it because we're like, well, if I lead for God, then I'll get a good husband or wife at some point. And then, you know, we don't get the recognition or appreciation or romance or fill in the blank that we thought we would get. And we start to get resentful. And what it does is it reveals to us that we need to go deeper into Christ-like leadership. We need to look at the teaching of Peter here and the teaching of Jesus and let him teach me how to lead like him. Here's a third contrast. He says, not as lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. And so here's the difference between lording over and serving under. Lording over versus serving under. And, you know, Jesus, he turned this world's leadership model upside down. This term to lord over someone, this is a term that's only used once in the teachings of Jesus. And it was his like quintessential teaching on leadership. Peter was there for this. Jesus says in Mark 10, he says, you know the rulers in this world lord it over their people. And you know the officials flaunt their authority over those under them. Have you ever seen a boss like that? Ever had a leader, an authority figure like that? You ever see politicians doing that? You ever see the great and mighty in the world doing that? Lording it over, flaunting their authority. But Jesus says, among you it'll be different. It'll be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. For even the Son of Man, referring to himself, came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. He's serving, he's giving. He's saying that over and over again. And you know, in the world, people might work hard because they want to work their way up the ladder. And they want the corner office and the leather chair. And they want to tell people, they want to pass the dirty work off on somebody else. They want the money. But Jesus says, no, we're not trying to go up the corporate ladder. We're trying to go down the way of the servant. And Jesus is like, look at me. Greatest being ever. I came not to be served, but to serve. And he's going to do the ultimate act of sacrifice, the ultimate act of humility. This is why the sheep follow the shepherd. Because the shepherd lays down his life for the sheep, because he gave his life as a ransom for many. You know, the sheep's not like looking at the org chart and is like, well, looks like it says I follow the shepherd. No, they follow the shepherd because the shepherd loves the sheep, serves the sheep. And you know, the reason we follow Jesus is not we're like, well, looks like he's God the Son. I guess I have to. Like, we should for that reason, but he didn't settle for that. He died on a cross for you. He gave his life for you. And that's why we follow him. And the way that we have influence as shepherds under the chief shepherd is by doing the same thing. It's not by flaunting our title. We're like, hey, look at me. Look at my title, everybody. No. Our authority, our influence comes from our service, from our sacrifice. And that is how we shape people's lives. People might reluctantly follow someone because of their title, but they will passionately follow someone and really will follow Christ because of that someone, because they've been served. Finally, a fourth and final contrast, humbling yourself versus exalting yourself. And he takes a couple verses to unpack this one because it's so important. He says, "You younger men likewise be subject to their elder, to your elders." So he addresses the youth in the audience. And, youth is often associated with a lot of things. But one it can be associated with is feeling like I know better. Isn't this like the classic teenager feels like they know everything, right? You know, one of the points Peter's making here is bad followers make bad leaders. You want to lead for God? You need to learn how to follow God. You need to learn how to follow. Because if you can't follow, you're not going to be trustworthy as a leader. You know, people who are rebellious types, they can be awesome leaders, but it's only after that rebel self-will is broken. Strong will is great. Self-will, you know, that is, that's going to be something that's going to be a showstopper for your spiritual leadership. But he says, all of you, you know, whether you're the elders, the deacons, the young, the old, whoever you are, all of you need to clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. Everyone needs to humble themselves toward everyone else. Because God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And so we try to exalt ourselves and says, God is going to oppose you. And that's pretty scary. Like, if I'm trying to serve God, the last thing I want to do is be opposed by God. And yet, this verse right here says that can happen. Why? Because of pride. Because I am exalting myself, and God says, hey, you're going the wrong direction. You've got the wrong perspective here. You know, when you're not trying to exalt yourself, I will exalt you. I give grace to the humble. That's the person that I'm looking to get behind. But the person that's puffing themselves up, God's like, I'm not going to be able to unleash my power as much on your behalf. And the thing about pride is pride can be subtle. It can be difficult. You know, pride is always lurking there. Even for the humble, might get something going for God, might get some success going, and then might be tempted to, you know, pat themselves on the back and feel like I'm the one that's accomplished this by my own hand. Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges talk about in their book, Lead Like Jesus, they talk about some of the different faces of pride that we might see popping up in our lives. One point they make is when you're engaged in a discussion, you resist acknowledging the other person's idea is actually better than your own. You know, the righter they are, the madder you get, they say. And it's like, you know, the shepherd, sacrificial servant leader doesn't have to be right all the time, but can recognize good ideas, can recognize when, you know, God gives a word to someone else and rallies behind that. I don't have to be the one to come up with everything. It's not about me. It's about God and it's about the truth. You start to do all the talking, taking too much credit, demanding the attention, boasting or showing off or demanding service on the basis of your position. And so you just think, I'm entitled to certain things. And, you know, just sit back and listen to me lecture you on what's up. Do you judge the value of an idea by who said it rather than by the quality of the thought? That is politics. You know, we should be able to judge an idea on its own merit and not like, well, what's the rank of the person who said this? You treat people as too far below you in position or credentials to seek their input on issues that affect them. Yeah, like Peter's not like talking down to these people. No, he's like, I'm your fellow elder. And I think that's the attitude we should strive to have no matter what, is that, you know, we're all on the same level here. What do you think about that? And I'm seeking out other people have some pretty good ideas if you'll just stop and ask and listen. And good leaders will do that because they know they don't have all the answers. They're just looking for wisdom. Your image becomes more important than substance and truth. This is why this is what keeps us from admitting we're wrong. This is what keeps us from asking for help. That's not the kind of leadership that Christ taught. You act as if the rules, judgments, and standards you impose on others should not apply to you. Yeah, leaders get in trouble with this. They feel like they're above the law. They're above the rules that everybody else has to follow. And this is where they get into unethical behavior. Winning and losing become the only criteria you value. Character becomes an option. I don't really care about integrity. My integrity, doing the right thing, I just want the advantage. And I don't care how I get it. And finally, you look, you know, when there's success, you look in the mirror and you're like, I wonder where the success came from. And you're looking in the mirror, you're looking back at yourself. How did I accomplish this? But you look out the window for the cause of failure. You know, when something goes wrong, you're like, who messed this up? You know, good leaders do the opposite. When things go right, they look out the window and they're like, it was these guys. It was them. When things go wrong, they're like, I should have done better as a leader here. Good leaders take extreme ownership. They don't throw the sheep under the bus when things mess up. No, they're like, I should have done better. They also take extreme ownership of fixing the problem. I'm going to do something to make this right now. And that's the kind of leadership that Peter's talking about here. That's sacrificial servant leadership. It's humble leadership. So do you want to be opposed or exalted by God? Do you want to be opposed by God or lifted up by God? Because, like he says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time. And so if we humble ourselves, then we put ourselves in a position where at the proper time, and that's for God to decide, not me, he will exalt you. Jesus tells this story in Luke 14 about this banquet. And, you know, he's watching people show up for this banquet. And, you know, in a banquet, there were you know, the place of honor was the place closest to the head of the table where the host would sit. And then, like, the least important place was the farthest away from him. And so some people, they just walk right in, and they just walk right down, and they just plop themselves down right in the place of honor. Other people, they would walk in, and they would just go down to the least important spot at the table. And Jesus says, when you show up, don't you go to and plop yourself down in the most important place? Because what if the host shows up and then everyone's there and he's like, oh, actually, I wanted you sitting in the least important spot. And then in front of everybody, you do this march of shame all the way down the table to sit in the least important place. How embarrassing. Jesus is like, what do you have to lose by just sitting in the least important spot? Really? I mean, the head of the banquet, he's the one who decides where everybody sits anyway. Why not just sit in the lowest spot? And then if you get moved up, it's like, oh, wow, look at this. Moving up in the world. And in front of everybody, the host has to single you out to tell you to move up. It's like you're getting criticized for being too humble. That, Jesus says, is how we should be. I'm not going to go and plop myself down in a certain place because I think that's where I should be. Now, I'm not going to resist. Some people, the host is like, move up, and you're like, oh no, I'm too humble to do that. No. When the master says move up, to resist him is not humility. No, it's we do what we sit wherever he wants us to sit. And even if maybe sitting a little higher might have some challenges that come with it, we need to be willing to move up. We should want to move up. We just don't want to put ourselves there. Paul says it's a good thing to want to be an elder. That's a noble aspiration. And I may work toward becoming the kind of person that could be picked for something like that, but I'm not just going to announce that I'm one. God is the one who decides. And so do you want to be opposed or exalted by God? And then finally, he says, we're humbling ourselves and we're casting all our anxiety on him because he cares for you. Isn't it interesting? He brings up anxiety in connection with pride. And peace, he brings up in connection with humility. Here's the thing. If you want the glory, you also have to carry the anxiety around. If you try to achieve it for yourself, then you've got to maintain it. A wise person once said, if you strive to gain, you will strive to maintain. And if you are just working to move yourself up the table, then you also are stuck with all of the maintenance for that. But if God blesses you, if God blesses your service to him, then I don't have to be the one to frantically maintain it in the power of my own strength. because I know God wants me here. And I can be at peace because I'm right where God wants me. Shepherd the flock of God. That's Peter's command here. Why did Peter devote his life to this? Why did he do that? He's been going at it for 30 years now since Jesus left. And he's old. He's suffered a lot. He's been through so much. Why did he devote his life to this? I'll give you two reasons. One of them, they're both in this passage. The first one's a little hard to detect. But it's because he knew the shepherd's grace and love. And the reason why I say this one is in this passage is because when Peter says, shepherd the flock, he's repeating a teaching that Jesus gave to him exactly once, exactly one time, at a very significant moment in Peter's life. Really, I would say perhaps the turning point of Peter's life. You see, Peter, he was the kind of guy that he would speak first and think later. He was the guy that said what everybody else was thinking, even if it was wrong. He's got his foot, he's walking around constantly with his foot in the mouth in the Gospels. But, you know, Jesus, he took him in. He was one of Jesus's closest friends. He was in the inner circle. You know, when Peter says he was a witness of the sufferings of Christ, there was one very important suffering that Peter missed because of his own failure. And that was the most important suffering that Jesus ever went through, the cross. Peter wasn't there because Peter messed up really bad and everybody knew about it. You see, on the final night where Jesus was going to go to the cross, you know, he's teaching his disciples about leadership because they're arguing about who's the greatest. And then he starts telling them, you know, you guys are going to abandon me tonight. And Peter's like, Lord, even if all of these fall away, I won't leave you. I'm going to stick by you to the end. And Jesus says, Peter, you're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, before the alarm clock goes off. And so they go out there, and Peter is determined. He's got his sword that he's brought along. You know, he's out there in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's really trying hard to pray, even though he falls asleep three different times, as we saw last week. But then the mob, you know, the guards show up, and Peter's like, shing, and he's like, yeah! And he chops a guy's ear off. And Jesus is like, Peter, what are you doing? And Jesus picks the ear up and sticks it back on the guy like Mr. Potato Head. And Jesus is like, let my guys go. You came for me. And the disciples scatter. But Peter circles back around. Him and John, they follow Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. They're there as Jesus is in his trial, and Peter's there, he's sticking by Jesus. He's like, I said I wouldn't leave. And he's sitting around this charcoal fire. And this little girl comes up and she's like, hey, mister, I think you're one of his. And he's like, no, I'm not. Somebody else comes up and is like, I can tell. Didn't I see you with Jesus? And he's like, no. And they're like, I'm pretty sure. Aren't you from Galilee? I can tell by the way you talk, because they talk like this up there. And Peter, with curses, denies Jesus a third time. And then the rooster crows, and then he looks over, and they've brought beaten, bloody Jesus back out, and Jesus watches the third denial. And Peter is like, what have I done? And he begins weeping bitterly, and he flees, and he's weeping in the streets of Jerusalem while Jesus is going through the most difficult night of his life. Well, Jesus rises from the dead. He appears to the whole group. It's not clear that he'd had any direct interaction with Peter, though, at that point. Peter and the fellas, they go back up to Galilee, and they go back out fishing one night, because they were fishermen in their former occupation. And they're out, they're fishing, they're out all night, they don't catch anything. And then they're sailing in the next morning, and there's this guy on the shore. He's like, hey, how's the fishing coming? They're like, we didn't catch anything. He's like, did you try the other side of the boat? And they're like, you know, the water goes under. But they throw it over, and all of a sudden, they can't pull the net in. And they remember, we've been through this before. And Peter throws his coat on, hops in the water, and begins swimming as fast as he can to the shore. Only he's like kind of too far out. And so then the boat just like passes him. Like, hey, Peter. So he gets to shore, helps tie it. He knows it's Jesus. He wants to see Jesus. And he runs up to Jesus, and Jesus is sitting there, and he's cooking breakfast over a charcoal fire. In case you're keeping score at home, there's only two charcoal fires in the entire Bible. The one Peter was at when he denied Christ, and the one that morning when Jesus decides it's time to talk about what happened, Peter. As they have breakfast, and then Jesus pulls Peter aside and he says, "So, you really love me more than all the rest?" And Peter's just like, "You know, I really like you, Lord." He can't say, he just sacrificially loves him. And then Jesus says, "Feed my sheep." And then he asks him again, he says, "So you really love me? Like total sacrificial love me?" And then Peter's like, "You know, I like you, Lord." And he's like, "Shepherd my lambs." And then a third time, probably for the three denials, he says, "So you really like me?" And Peter's like, "Yeah, I guess so." And he says, "Feed my sheep." And that was the last Jesus said to him about it, as far as we know. He says, "Look, now you've learned your lesson. You've learned your own weaknesses. You've learned you aren't quite as committed to me as you thought you were. You've seen your failure in a super public way. And now you're finally in a spot where I can say, Peter, feed my sheep. I've got really important stuff for you." You know, it wasn't when Peter's like, "Even if I'll deny you, I won't." That's not when he gave him the command to feed my sheep, to shepherd my flock. No, it was after he had wept bitterly on the streets of Jerusalem, after he'd been brought face to face with his own shortcomings. You know, you can't be a spiritual leader. You can't be a shepherd leader unless you learn to lead under grace. And he knew the shepherd's grace, and he knew the shepherd's love, and he devoted the rest of his life to caring for Christ's sheep, caring for his flock. That was the best thing he could do at that time. And because he couldn't wait for his homecoming. As he says in verse 4, "When the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Shepherd the flock of God among you, because the chief shepherd will be here soon." And Peter just says, "I cannot wait until that day. It's been 30 years. I miss my friend. I've done my best. I can't wait. I've run my race. I've finished the course. I've fought the good fight. I want to stand before Christ. I want to stand before my friend, and I want to say, Lord, I didn't run away this time. I didn't deny you. I fed your sheep." And Jesus is going to say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Friend, I missed you. Come on in. We got a lot to talk about." That's what he's looking forward to. That's what we're looking forward to. That's what Peter is trying to get the eyes of these leaders focused on, because it's going to be hard. And they got to keep their eyes on the end if they're going to make it. They got to remember the grace and the love that they've been shown by Jesus, and they need to look forward to that day, which is coming so soon, so soon. Yeah, tonight the chief shepherd has two questions for you. First of all, will you join my flock? The good shepherd laid his life down for the sheep. He laid his life down for you. You have been wandering. If you're not part of Christ's flock, you've been wandering your whole life. You are a defenseless, utterly defenseless sheep in this metaphor. You need a good shepherd, the watchful, wise, caring, never going to let you down shepherd. That's what you need. And he's inviting you. And he says, "My sheep know my voice, and no one can ever take them away from me. He will not let you down. Will you join his flock?" Secondly, will you shepherd my sheep? You know, what Jesus said to Peter, he wants each one of us. He calls all of us to servant leadership. That's the new commandment, to love one another. Properly defined, Christian leadership is sacrificial love. He wants you to take an interest in the lives of other people. And it starts small. And don't worry about where it's headed. Just start by doing the things that Jesus taught about leadership, by doing the things that Peter's echoing in this passage here. And see where God leads you. See where God leads you. And keep your eyes on the end so that you can say, I fought the good fight. I finished the course. I did my best by your grace to shepherd your sheep. And now I'm ready to come home. Yes, Lord, what an example you set for us with leadership. God, we don't deserve to be under your care. We don't deserve to have the good shepherd looking over us. And I pray that we would follow his leadership. I pray also that we would respond by receiving that love, receiving your forgiveness, and also by turning and taking up the charge to feed your sheep, to serve the others that you put around us, Lord. And we're going to trust you're going to show us how to do that. We're going to trust that you're going to exalt us at the proper time if you want us to do more. And we just want to be faithful to you, Lord. We want to be working right out there in the field with you, the chief shepherd, and enjoying this incredibly meaningful task of servant leadership. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.